Srila Prabhupada ki, Bhaktivedanta ki, Granthada Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Gopremanande. So what did we discuss in last night's class?
Nanda Maharaj tries to maintain the mood of the Vrijavasis, which is complete love and attachment to Krishna.
Yep, that's good. Let's close that door. Any other points?
The 10 offences, how out of the 10, 8 of them can be dispelled by knowledge, but a Vaishnava Bharatan not following the instructions of Guru, you have to go directly and apologise to whoever you committed the offence to.
Yep. Good point. Anything else?
Madhavacharya is the desire thief.
Madhavendra Puri.
Madhavacharya.
What did I say?
Madhavacharya. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Anything else?
It says state of insanity to forget Krishna at any time. So it's wonderful pastime for Krishna.
Good.
The Lord has given us the freedom so that we can have peace.
Yeah, free will.
It's very important to chant attentively, because chanting attentively leads to all the other wrong things we do. It's kind of the root, or it can dispel going wrong.
Yeah, nice point. Any other points?
Yeah, we have to develop anurag.
Anurag, yeah.
You can say this for me that we are not developing anurag.
Yeah, nice point. Anything else? Okay, so tonight we'll begin chapter 27. So it's chapter 27 called?
Lord Indra and Namaskar.
Yeah. So this is after the Govardhan Lila. Yeah. I guess one would be. Please come again. So, after the Govardhan Lila takes place, Indra has committed a great offense. So now we'll hear about Indra approaching Krishna in order to relieve his offense. Because these four chapters are just describing Govardhan Lila. So it shows the significance of this pastime of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. Two chapters, and then one chapter called Wonderful Krishna, which then elaborates how the Vrijavasis respond after Krishna has lifted Govardhan Hill. And then now a further chapter, the four chapters in total, primarily focused or exclusively focused on Krishna's lifting the hill. Now Indra, after committing his offense, he rectifies himself. So there's an interesting analysis of the consciousness of a conditioned soul, like us. Shukadev Goswami said, after Krishna had lifted Govardhan Hill and thus protected the inhabitants of Braj from the terrible rainfall, Surabhi, the mother of the cows, came from her planet to see Krishna. She was accompanied by Indra. Jogi?
The word Kolinka here indicates the material planet called Goloka, which is filled with exceptional cows. Surabhi went joyfully to see Krishna, but Indra went fearfully, as indicated by this verse. Lord Krishna had to adopt extraordinary measures to protect his Vrindavan associates from Indra's obnoxious and offensive attack. Certainly Indra was ashamed and also nervous about his future. Having acted improperly, he had fearfully gone to seek the shelter of Lord Brahma, who had then ordered him to take along Surabhi from the material Golok planet and go to see Krishna.
Hmm. So any points there?
So Brahma instructed him to take Surabhi, the mother Surabhi, felt that that would allow Krishna to have more compassion for Indra.
Mm. Yep. Anything else?
Yesterday he was mentioning that for the devotee the death is not fear, but love. So here also like this, Mother Surabhi is approaching Krishna with love, like she has no fear. But Indra is approaching Krishna with fear.
Mm.
But the same as when he is with his son.
Yeah, good point. Anything else?
Can you clarify about this material polar planet?
Yeah, it doesn't say specifically where it is, but it says there's a material planet where there's many, many cows. Material Goloka.
In the material world?
In this, yeah, in the material world.
Could it be the Goloka
where? No. No, it's a material planet because the point the Acharyas make is that Surabhi could not be a spiritual cow from the spiritual world because Indra is not qualified to see a spiritual cow. So he cannot be approaching Krishna with a spiritual cow. It must be from a material, it's a cow in this world. So the point is that Krishna is known as Gopal. So this whole pastime, Krishna is establishing Govardhan Puja and Gopuja. So he's showing us the importance of cow protection and cow seva and cow worship. Because only when the cow comes before Indra, then Krishna's heart becomes pacified.
Mm.
So it shows the importance of cow protection. And that Krishna himself establishes Gopuja as superior to Indra Puja or any other material worship in this material world. So, you know, I live with the cows down at the Hare Krishna Valley. But even I don't have, as I said before, enough appreciation of the position of the cows. But if we do have appreciation of the position of the cows, then automatically Krishna will become fond of you. Because we understand when the cows are protected properly, then Krishna, his mercy becomes incredibly manifest. You know, it could even be, well actually it is, but it definitely could be a large part of why this temple is currently experiencing a great amount of success is because there's a good cow protection program. So we can't underestimate the potency of looking after the cows. So Indra, he comes in a mood of, as Meenakshi said, in a mood of fear. And he should be fearful because he's offended Krishna greatly. But Surabhi is coming without fear. So Krishna, he reciprocates. We see all through these pastimes in Vrindavan, he reciprocates according to the mood of the devotee. So because the cows just have affection, then Krishna is affectionate. So if we approach Krishna with affection, with the same kind of mood, then Krishna will be affectionate towards us. But if we are fearful, then that will hinder the relationship or hamper how much you can reciprocate with Krishna. And if you commit offenses, as we said last night, it's a great impediment to the relationship. In this world, it's the same. If you offend a devotee, then your relationship is greatly impeded. You can't be close to the devotee as long as offenses are there. You have to clear the offenses. So Indra has done the same thing. He's committed a great offense, therefore he has to clear the offense in order to approach Krishna. Yeah? So he's very fearful at this point in time. This describes as we go in, he thinks that Krishna is going to send Yamaraj to punish him. But he's very scared. He doesn't know how Krishna is going to respond. So it's interesting how Krishna responds. Krishna sees the good in the devotee. Because Krishna is always in Shuddha Sattva. So Krishna is always situated in pure goodness. So even when the devotee commits an offense, Krishna still sees the goodness within the devotee. And Prabhupada was like that also. Even when devotees committed offenses, but Prabhupada still gave them a chance. It was rare that Prabhupada would completely reject someone. You'd have to commit a great offense towards Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said that time, I told that story recently, one devotee was performing improper activities, and then Prabhupada kept giving him chances to rectify himself. And Prabhupada said to Tamal Krishnamaraj, because Tamal Krishnamaraj questioned Prabhupada, he said, why do you keep giving him chances? And Prabhupada said, there is no limit to the mercy of Lord Nityananda. So he kept giving him chances. But then eventually Prabhupada said, okay, that's it. Remove him. There's too much uproar was taking place. But it was rare that Prabhupada would reject someone. There was one disciple of Prabhupada who rejected Prabhupada as his guru, who was initiated by Prabhupada, who rejected him. And then he went to Prabhupada because he had found another guru. And he went to Prabhupada and said, please bless me that I will find a real guru, a Shad guru. Said that to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, yes, I bless you, then 30,000 lifetimes you will receive a real guru. That's a heavy curse. So you have to be very careful. Because if you commit offences, it impedes your relationship with Krishna, with the guru, with devotees. So Indra, at least he's doing the right thing because he's a devotee. Then what does he do? He rectifies himself. He goes to Krishna and he begs forgiveness. So we should do that. No matter who we are, or who we think we are, if we commit an offence, you have to go and beg forgiveness. Right? Even if the devotee is junior to you. If you commit an offence, you have to go and beg forgiveness. You have to go and say, pardon me, I didn't mean to offend you. I'm sorry that I've committed offence. Doesn't matter how apparently advanced you are. So, any points?
Krishna was more offended because he troubled Vrajvasis through the heavy rain. If Krishna can take any difficulty upon him, but not on his devotee, he will not compromise when the time comes for his devotee.
Anything else?
Srimad Bhagavatam is warning again and again about the Vaishnava.
This point is, as you say, it's brought out again and again and again. This is practically one thing that will ruin your devotional service. If you offend devotees, you're in big trouble. If you don't offend devotees, if you get blessings of devotees, then you'll take off in devotional service. Indra was very ashamed of having offended the Lord. Approaching him in a solitary place, Indra fell down and lay his helmet, whose effulgence was as brilliant as the sun, upon the Lord's lotus feet. Would have a bundle pool?
A specific solitary place where Indra approached Sri Krishna is mentioned by the sage, by Sampaya in the Harivamsa. He saw him, Krishna, sitting at the base of Govardhana Hill. From the commentaries of the Acharyas, we understand that Lord Krishna wanted to provide a solitary meeting for Indra so that he would not be further humiliated. Indra came to Sharada and begged forgiveness. And the Lord allow him to do so privately.
Good. So what are the points there?
But why now Lord is so merciful on us?
Why what?
Why the Lord is so merciful on us? He didn't want to humiliate him more.
In what way?
Because it says not that the Lord always wants that he should come in the private place so just so that he should not be humiliated more. So why?
Yeah, we'll discuss this point. It's an interesting point. So, any other points?
Because he's the king of demigods, he don't want to spoil his reputation in front of them so that he can still maintain it.
Yeah, good point. Anything else?
Krishna doesn't want his devotee to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting, it's a cultural point. culture is disappearing in the world. At least, you know, most of you here are Indian bodied. So you're, by birth, it's a superior birth to be born in that body, because you still get a certain amount of culture. Whereas in the West, we experience less culture because culture is diminishing quickly. In India, it's diminishing quickly now too, but at least there's more there. You know, we experience Indian devotees tend to have more sense of culture. So it's an interesting cultural point, because when there's sensitive subject matters which need to be discussed, it's proper if these things are done in private. It actually said it's a Vedic cultural point. We should not be the bearers of bad news. Because it says, it's like some saying in, like, from the Vedic times, that bad news carries itself. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to think it's your duty to spread it. It will spread itself. You don't have to worry. You know, if something bad takes place or someone does something wrong, everyone finds out quickly. So you don't have to worry. So it's not auspicious for you to be the carrier of the bad news. You know, sometimes you meet devotees and they say, oh, did you hear what so-and-so did? Or have you heard about that? And then, you know, it's just because the first canto says that as long as you're like a crow, you like to hear about the
garbage.
The garbage. And the reason devotees are like that is because they don't do what we're doing right now. Because this is what the swans do. The swans come and they hear about Krishna. They drink the milk. They don't go to the rubbish. So when you get a taste for hearing Bhagavatam, you don't want to hear these things. Especially when I just finish class, I walk out and someone comes up and says something. Sometimes I just look at them and it's like, you know, they can see on my face. It's like alien communication or something. There's no interest. Because we've just been absorbed in Bhagavatam. Maybe tomorrow sometime halfway through the day someone says something, and then, you know. But generally, we do not like to hear these things. And the more you become attached to hearing about Krishna, you don't want to hear about the mundane topics. Yeah. It's the same old thing. It's all the same. Prahlad Maharaj says it's just chewing the chewed.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly the same thing. We've heard it 1,000 times before. We hear it 1,000 times again. It's the same old thing. So what's new? So, if someone does do something wrong, which happens all the time, we do it and other people do it, and if you have to speak to a devotee, then you see how the way Krishna is dealing, as the devotees are pointing out, Krishna doesn't just go in front of everyone, in front of the whole of Vrindavan and all the devotees. He goes off on the pretext that he's examining Govardhan Hill to see how much damage is being done to Giriraj, and then he does that because he knows Indra will come. So he wants Indra because Indra's feeling bad, he's humiliated, so Krishna wants to deal with him privately. So we should also be like that. Should be sensitive. Because sometimes we have to correct devotees. We only correct in public if we really want to push the point. But generally, especially on sensitive things, you know, if someone comes late for class, okay, I'll chastise in front of everyone. I'll say, okay, you nonsense, you know, stop coming late for class. And that's something that needs to be done so the devotee learns like that. But if it's a sensitive thing, like a serious issue, you don't say it in front of everyone. You say, oh, this devotee fell down and has done some nonsense activity. No, you take it privately and you counsel the devotee privately. So Krishna is showing it's a cultural point. These days, you know, in the media, they want to throw everything everywhere. You know, someone did something wrong and then it's on the front page of the newspaper. That's actually not appropriate. It's not Vedic etiquette or Vedic culture. When Madhu Dwiza Prabhu, you know Madhu Dwiza Prabhu?
Yeah.
He was one of the first GBCs in Australia, maybe the first or one of the first in Australia. So he was the one who purchased this temple we're in now. Right? So he was a sannyasi, disciple of Prabhupada. But he fell down with a Mataji, a Brahmacharini. So he was sannyasi, but he was having problems with sex desire. One time Prabhupada said, actually, he said, I gave them all sannyas, but they weren't qualified. I gave them sannyas because he had to push on the preaching. So he grabbed them. He said, yeah, okay, you be sannyasi. Prabhupada knew they weren't qualified. So it wasn't surprising that they fell down. You know, many did, but it's not surprising. And Prabhupada did not reject them. Bali Madan, he gave sannyas. He fell down and Prabhupada married him. He gave him sannyas, and then when he could not maintain the vow, then Prabhupada himself married him. You can see on the video, Prabhupada marries him. So when Madhudwija Prabhu, he fell down, he had problems, then all the devotees start talking about it. Oh, Madhudwija Prabhu, you know, he did this, you know, he's left his sannyas. And Prabhupada, when Prabhupada found out, he said, you should not have said anything. He said, now you've made it very difficult for him to come back. And he didn't come back. You know, it was 20 years before he came back to devotional service. Inside ISKCON. He always kept doing devotional service, but inside ISKCON. Nearly 20 years. And Prabhupada was very upset. He said, you should not have said anything. He said, it's not a public discussion. This is a private thing. It's between the guru and the disciple. But they made it very difficult. So Krishna is showing us this is a cultural point. We should learn from this. Now it's interesting because Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that when Indra came to Krishna, what did Krishna do?
Just keep quiet.
No, that's Lord Brahma. Mm-hmm. But when Indra came begging, Krishna said, as soon as he saw Indra, he said, I've offended you. He said, you must be very upset with me, because we're about to do Indra Jagya, which we've been doing for years and years and years in our village, and I took everything and I gave it to Govardhan Hill. He said, so please forgive me. You must be upset with me. This is Krishna, God himself. Says to Indra, to the king of the demigods, you know, please forgive me. I've offended you. I know I've offended you, and that's why you became so angry. You know, so that's Krishna's position. We're so full of false ego, it's hard for us to do things like this. You know, to be humble. You know, even when we've been offended. But then to be humble. You know, it's hard for us to do. Like, you won't get back to Krishna. You won't be allowed to enter back into Krishna's pastimes until you develop these kind of qualities. Krishna himself is showing us. You have to become free from false ego. Krishna himself is free from false ego. He treats Indra very respectfully. It's quite remarkable. You have to be very exalted to act like this. So Krishna is showing us perfect acha, perfect behavior, perfect pracha, perfect speech. Any points?
Over appreciation.
Be humble. Yeah.
His desire to live with his devotees for all 7 days and nights. So actually, Indra helped him. So he was really pleased with him.
Yeah, on one level, he was pleased with him. So.
And the other thing I wanted to know, the private is serving two purposes. One is he doesn't want to humiliate Indra very much. The other could be that he didn't want the villagers to know his exalted position. You know, that King Indra is going down, you know, and asking for forgiveness. And Lord Krishna didn't want the Vidvasis to do.
I think just a point that we can all find encouragement from is that when Indra was angry and acting wrongly, Krishna wasn't merciful. He was humiliating him. But when Indra became humble, Krishna so perfect he became even more humble. So it was also because Indra was sorry.
Yeah, his attitude changed. Krishna reciprocated. That's good. Anything else? Okay. Indra had now heard of and seen the transcendental power of omnipotent Krishna, and his false pride in being the Lord of the three worlds was thus defeated. Holding his hands together in supplication, he addressed the Lord as follows. King Indra said, your transcendental form and manifestation of pure goodness is undisturbed by change, shining with knowledge and devoid of passion and ignorance. In you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature, which is based on illusion and ignorance. I'm trying to read it.
The great Bhagavatam commentators, Srila Sridhar Swami, has masterfully explained the Sanskrit elements of this profound verse. The Sanskrit word dham has several meanings: A. Dwelling place, house, abode, and so on. B. A favorite thing or person, delight or pleasure. C. Form or appearance. D. Power, strength, majesty, glory, splendor, or light. Concerning the first set of meanings, the Vedanta Sutra states that the absolute truth is the source and resting place of all existence. In the first verse of the Bhagavatam, that absolute truth is said to be Krishna. Although Lord Krishna exists in his own dham or abode called Krishna Lok, he himself is the abode of all existence, as Arjuna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita, where he addresses Krishna as Param Dham, the supreme abode. The very name Krishna indicates the all-attractive person, and thus Lord Krishna, the source of all beauty and pleasure, is certainly the favorite thing or person, delight and pleasure. Ultimately, these terms can refer only to Krishna. Dharma also refers to form or appearance, and as Indra offered these prayers, he was in fact directly seeing the form of Krishna before him. As clearly explained in the Vedic literature, Lord Krishna's power, strength, majesty, splendor, and effulgence are all contained within his transcendental body and thus attest to the infinite glories of the Lord. Srila Sridhar Swami has brilliantly summarized all these meanings of the word dham by giving the Sanskrit term swarup as its name. The word swarup means one's own form or shape, and also one's own condition, character, or nature. Since Lord Krishna, being pure spirit, is non-different from his body, there is absolutely no difference between the Lord and his visible form. By contrast, in this material world, we conditioned souls are all distinctly different from our bodies, whether those bodies be male, female, black, white, or whatever. All of us are eternal souls, different from our temporary, flimsy bodies.
That's good. Thank you. Any points there?
Sanskrit is an amazing language for one word, there's so many meanings.
Yeah. Yeah, so the word dharm, param dharma, param brahma, is said in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is the supreme abode. So, in other words, Indra is saying that Krishna is on the platform of Vishuddha Sattva, which means pure goodness. Krishna is not conditioned. Brinda, calm down a bit. Krishna is not a conditioned soul. Krishna is completely free from the effects of the modes of material nature. When we're dealing with Krishna, we're dealing with a completely spiritual entity. You have to meditate very deeply on this point. You study these verses, this little section of Indra's prayers, and meditate very deeply. Krishna is a transcendental living entity. And the only way that you can reciprocate fully with Krishna, you also have to become a transcendental living entity. You have to become like a coconut. When it is ripe, then inwardly, the inner portion of the coconut becomes separate from the outer shell. So in the same way, you may be in a material body, we are in material bodies, but we need to become separate from it, or detached from the material body, like Prabhupada was. Prabhupada was in a material body, but not attached to the material body. At that point, you can then relate to Krishna. And then at the time of death, then Krishna will give you a spiritual form in which you can directly serve and relate to him. So there's nothing mundane about Krishna. He is a completely spiritual entity. But this is a deep meditation. This is something you have to meditate on very deeply to realize. It's not an easy thing to realize. But it is compulsory that all of us realize that Krishna is a completely spiritual living entity. He's nothing mundane. And Indra is having something of this realization. He's saying, you are not from this world. Your power is way beyond this world. And you're far more powerful than I am. Any points? Okay. How then could there exist in you the symptom of an ignorant person, such as greed, lust, and envy, which are produced by one's previous involvement in material existence, and which cause one to become further entangled in material existence? And yet, as the Supreme Lord, you impose punishment to protect religious principles and curb down the wicked. Jagannath Mahaprabhu.
This complex philosophical statement by Indra may be analyzed as follows. In the first line of this verse, Indra refers to the main idea expressed at the end of the previous verse, namely that the great currents of material existence, which are based on ignorance, cannot possibly exist within the Supreme Lord. The words tat dhetava and tat krita indicate that something causes the modes of nature to manifest, and that they in turn become the cause of that which caused them. In the second line of this verse, we find that it is material feelings such as greed, lust, envy, and anger that cause the modes of nature to manifest, and that are themselves caused by the modes of nature.
That's good. So, any points there? So the Bhagavatam says that if one is affected by the modes of material nature, then material qualities will manifest in one's consciousness. So if you are affected by the mode of passion, then lust will manifest in your consciousness. So Friedananda Maharaj, in his purport, he gives a nice example. He says that if you're associating with the opposite sex, and then lust, because of that association, lust manifests in your consciousness. If you're affected by the mode of passion just sweeps along, and then it controls you, it overwhelms you, and then you become fully absorbed in lust. Kama esha, krodha esha, rajaguna samudbhava. So as long as we're affected by the modes of nature, we'll be affected by these material qualities. And similarly, when we're affected by the mode of ignorance, then anger will influence and control our consciousness. So if someone's angry, you know they're in the mode of ignorance. And you know ourselves, if we're angry, we're in the mode of ignorance. And if we're lusty and greedy, we're in the mode of passion. So obviously these qualities do not affect Krishna. So in order to relate to Krishna, or to develop a relationship with him, we have to become free from these lower qualities, which means we have to become free from the influence of the modes of material nature. I remember when I was a new devotee, my Guru Maharaj said to me one time, he said that you have to realize or understand when the modes of nature are acting on you. And at the time, I couldn't even understand what he was talking about. I didn't even understand the statement. Because I was so much influenced by the modes of nature, I didn't even realize that I was being influenced by the modes of nature. They're just influencing me and I was just controlled. Now, at least, I can understand it more. I can see it when it's happening. I can see, the mode of passion is influencing me. Lust is there, or greed is there, or anger is there. So the mode of ignorance is influencing. So he said to me, you have to realize when the modes are affecting you and not identify with the modes and not allow them to control you. And gradually purify your consciousness by living in the mode of goodness, practicing devotional service in the mode of goodness, and then transferring from goodness to pure goodness. Now it's difficult because Bhagavatam says you're meant to live in the mode of goodness, and as far as I can see, everyone's struggling to do it because the modern lifestyle is not in the mode of goodness. Devotees have to get up at 3:30 in the morning, chant their rounds, do a bit of sadhana, do maybe a little bit of deity worship, have breakfast, and then leave straight for the office. And then work long, long hours, then come back at the end of the day exhausted, and then, rush to have some dinner and then get over here so I don't yell at you, so you get here at least, on time. Very difficult to practice the mode of goodness in the modern lifestyle with all the pressure which is there. But still we have to do it. And if you can do it, or at least attempt to do it, you'll get great blessings from Krishna in Kali Yuga. Even though it's very difficult, because it is very difficult. in the modern world. And even I don't have a outside job, so I'm unaffected. I can serve ISKCON all day and all night. That's my service. But even still, it's very difficult to rise to this platform of goodness and pure goodness. So if you can do it or attempt to do it in Kali Yuga, you get great blessings from Krishna. Any point?
I have a question. When, just from personal experience, when I'm in the mode of passion, or when I'm in the mode of when I'm angry, and by the time I realise I'm already angry, I'm already overtaken by that mode. Mm-hmm. There's no way to go back. Once you're really angry, it's like you can't backpedal anymore. So, any advice?
Don't become really angry. Any other question?
Does the feeling start first, or is it the feeling starts because of the influence of the modal modes?
Well, it's kind of the same thing. We're deeply affected or we're under the influence of the modes. And that consciousness is within us. So whichever is kicking it off, it's kind of almost parallel, the same thing. So,
they say in Bhagavad Gita,
you don't have to overanalyze it. They're so intricate, it doesn't really matter. Just get out of something. That's the point. Any other point? You are the father and spiritual master of this entire universe and also its supreme controller. You are insurmountable time, imposing punishment upon the sinful for their own benefit. Indeed, in your various incarnations, selected by your own free will, you act decisively to remove the false pride of those who presume themselves masters of this world. So, directly and indirectly, Krishna is attempting to deliver us from this material world. How does he do it indirectly?
He says the spiritual
master. Yeah. But specifically the way it's described in this verse. How is it that Krishna delivers the devotee? In this verse, what does it say? Or through the time factor. The time factor will teach you many lessons. Because as life goes on, you'll be crushed by time. As we were saying last night. The longer you stay in this world, the more you realize it doesn't work. That's the time factor. It just pushes it down, it grinds us. Prabhupada actually says this in some purports. The time factor grinds the living entity. So that is the nature of the time factor. I said last night, Tamal Krishnamurti said, everyone keeps telling you everything will get better, but it gets worse. That's the material world. And the longer you stay here, you just realize you're just getting ground down by the material energy. So what is that? That indirectly, that is Krishna bringing you to him. That's why he's pushing you down, because he's making you surrender. If he doesn't give you a hard time, you won't surrender. I remember I was in Sydney. The last time Tamal Krishnamurti came to Australia, he gave class, and Indradyumna Swami was sitting there. And at the end of the class, Indradyumna Swami asked Tamal Krishnamurti, she said, is it possible to go back to Godhead without going through intense suffering? Everyone was waiting to see what Tamal Krishnamurti would say. And he said, no, it's not possible. You can only go back to Godhead after you've gone through intense suffering. Material world to keep? No choice. So, we're all in the same club. We're all in the same boat. We're all suffering together. At least we've got each other to smile to each other when we're suffering. That's the point. We're suffering so much, at least we can look at each other and laugh about it. But the fact is, we have to suffer intensely. You can't go back to Krishna otherwise. So indirectly, Krishna brings us back to him by suffering, by the time factor, And directly, he delivers us by coming into this material world and displaying his pastimes. So that while we're suffering, why do we come to this class? Why do you come to the Bhaktivedanta class? Yeah, to learn about Krishna. Why? Because we're suffering so much. Some of us are coming because we're suffering so much, we've got no choice. Right? You wouldn't come otherwise. But your life's not miserable, you have to come. This is the only time of the week where you get any relief. Right? The rest of the time you're just being beaten by the material energy. You come here for 1 hour on a Monday and Tuesday night and you get some relief, and then you go back out and you get beaten again. So that's the influence of the material energy. So Krishna, he delivers the devotees directly by appearing himself, displaying his pastimes, and then we can read his pastimes and we can absorb ourselves in his pastimes. Because by hearing about him is non-different from associating with him. So both are manifestations of Krishna. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, time I am, kalosmi. So the time factor beats us, that is Krishna indirectly, and directly he manifests his pastimes. So he's here to deliver us in this material world. Mm. And Krishna can see Indra is proud. Does he remind you of anyone? When you read about Indra, does he remind you of anyone in particular?
Trump.
Trump? Anyone? Anyone else who reminds you of? Yeah, ourself. Yeah, I read about Indra and I think that's me. I'm worse than him. I'm more proud than him. Okay. So Krishna deals with us in such a way to diminish that pride. Yeah, he crushes every devotee. And if he hasn't done it to you yet, then just keep chanting. I remember in 1993, I was in Vrindavan. I heard Darshan Burajan Prabhu. And he was talking about when Krishna takes everything away from you. And I was just 23. I was just looking at him with a big smile on my face. And he just looked at me and he said, you don't know what I'm talking about, do you? And I said, I had no idea. You know. But then by 1997, I understood what he was talking about. And now I'm an expert. Now I'm an acharya in the land of suffering. Now I can give lectures on it. Because I have realization now. Because Krishna has crushed me too many times. And the best is yet to come. One thing you know in devotional service, that if you're suffering, you know it's going to get worse. And if Krishna has crushed you, you know that's not, he hasn't showed you his full intensity yet. I know for a fact it's coming. I don't know what it is, I don't know when it is, but all I know is coming. And I know that he keeps smiling the whole time. He just sits there on the altar and he just looks at you. But how'd you like that one? Yeah, sometimes I come in to see the deities and I'm so worn out. You know, I just come in, I virtually just fall on the floor and I just lay there in front of them. And I just say to them, I don't know why you do it or what you're doing, but obviously, you know, you're purifying me. So thank you. And then I stand up and I look at Krishna and he just goes, how was that one? Right? And he says, it's going to be worse next time. How do you like that? Are you going to keep serving me regardless? Because that's what he's looking for. He's looking for we have to develop the mentality. As Lord Brahma says in the 13th chapter of this canto, the very famous verse, he says, you have to keep serving him under any circumstance, regardless of how intense it gets. You just keep serving him. As the last verse of Shikshastika says, which we can't realize, but it says, whether you handle me roughly by your embrace or you make me broken-hearted by not being present before me, still you are my Lord, birth after birth. So that's what we have to develop, that mentality. Krishna, you do whatever you want. Because I know you're going to do it anyway, but I'm going to serve you. I don't care what you do. You do whatever you want, that's your business, but I'm just going to serve you. And Krishna's looking for that consciousness. And when you develop that consciousness, you go back to him. But as long as you think that you're a victim, then no, you cannot go back to him. Prabhupada says that whenever we suffer, we should think, I deserve much worse. Because why? Because we deserve much worse. How do you like the material world so far? I'm just looking at you from last time. How do you like the material world so far? Nila Gopa.
Not good.
Not good. In English they say overrated. Overrated. My brother says this all the time. It's overrated. This material, what is that? It's overrated. Oh, you'll be so happy. Just go to Las Vegas, you'll be happy. It's overrated. You get there, there's no happiness here. Srila Prabhupada said there's no happiness in the material world. He said if there's one place where there's happiness, it's Hawaii. He said Hawaii, maybe there's some happiness. He said the rest of it is... But if you go to Hawaii, it's not happiness there either. Any points?
Yeah.
Yep.
Then you said, why we come to this class? To have Krishna consciousness all the time. So we are Krishna consciousness all the time. By the way, on Sunday, last Sunday, Madhura Manohar Prabhu gave a very nice class. And he was telling about that. Third canto, 28th chapter, 30th verse. How we are sorrowful, just like ocean. Tears are full of ocean. Madhura Manohar can tell better.
Madhavacharya's
excellent class he gave.
That's good. Yeah, Madhavacharya says we've cried so many tears we could fill an ocean. But we didn't cry one tear for Krishna.
Prabhu didn't say that to his mother, Devaki.
Good.
Anything so what else? Did you say, Prabhu? We cried so many tears from the ocean.
Madhavacharya says, since we came to the material world,
yeah.
If you add up all the tears that we cry every time we're here in each lifetime,
yeah.
All the tears would fill up an ocean.
Okay.
But we didn't cry one tear for Krishna. Okay. That's our problem. Anything else?
But this line, Prabhuji, another way to curse, down the first attempts of the conditioned souls to establish the kingdom of God. Without God is through his features at insurmountable time. What does that mean?
Verse 6?
This is the 6th, the purport about the middle.
Oh, the purport. We'll keep moving. You can ask that later.
Okay.
Even fools like me who proudly think themselves universal lords quickly give up their conceit and directly take to the path of spiritual progressive. To take the path of the spiritually progressive when they see you are fearless even in the face of time. Thus you punish the mischievous only to instruct them. So if we don't voluntarily bow down before Krishna, what does the second canto of the Bhagavatam say? Second canto of Bhagavatam says, what is the use of your head, you know, if you do not bow it voluntarily before the Lord? If you do not touch it to the ground before the Lord? Otherwise it says it's just a weight upon your shoulders. There's no point having a head unless you put that head on the ground. And the Bhagavatam says that if you do not voluntarily put it on the ground before Krishna, at the time of death you'll be forced to put it on the ground. So you either do it voluntarily or you'll be forced. Mm-hmm. So basically you either surrender to Krishna voluntarily of your own volition or Krishna will force you to surrender. And once you become a devotee, Prabhupada says that Krishna will forcibly drag the devotee back to the spiritual world. Nectar of instruction, right? He says that in the purport. Anyone remember? I think it's in the Nectar of Instruction. And in the purport, Prabhupada says that Krishna will forcibly drag the devotee back to the spiritual world. So either you can do it voluntarily, you can just say to Krishna, I'll come voluntarily, I'm happy to follow and I'm happy to obey you and go back to the spiritual world. Or if you don't, then he will crush you and he will bring you back. So either way, we're going to go back. Now that we've joined ISKCON, that's it. Our lives are ruined. It's all over now. Right. We're in ISKCON now, and that's it. It's all finished. So now it's either we go back, make it easy, right, or we go back and Krishna just pulls us back. Right? So it's like that. Even there's a devotee called Buddhimanta. He was a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and he blooped. Prabhupada left the planet. When Prabhupada left, a number of devotees left. Brindy, you have to sit down, I can't do it. So when Prabhupada left the planet, a number of devotees left the movement because it was difficult for them. Prabhupada was not there anymore. So Buddhimanta Prabhu, he was a big book distributor when Prabhupada was on the planet, big book distributor. But then when Prabhupada left, he couldn't keep going, so he left. And he went off and he performed sinful activities. He performed things which are not good. He broke the regulative principles. He did some very bad things. But 10 years later, after Prabhupada left, he got a brain tumor. Mm-hmm. And then he woke up and he realized. And then he came back to Vrindavan. He left his body in Vrindavan. So his realization was that either you voluntarily surrender to Krishna, or Krishna's just going to grab you and pull you back. So that will happen. It's just up to us. You can do it the easy way or you can do it the hard way. It's our choice, that's all. But now you've joined ISKCON, that's it. The contract signed. It's all done. Yeah, we walked in here. I walked in this temple years ago, and I got tricked. Walked in, I signed the contract. I said, I'll give my life, and I did it. But now it's all ruined. So you either do it the hard way or you do it the easy way. It's up to us. But it's going to happen now. We're all going back to Godhead.
Yours are all auspicious, Prabhupada.
What's that?
It's all auspicious.
Yeah.
Whether he drags you or whether you go voluntarily.
Yeah. It's nice if we do it voluntarily because it sets a good example for the other devotees.
Yeah.
So it's good if we do it voluntarily. Engrossed in pride over my ruling power, ignorant of your majesty, I offended you. O Lord, may you forgive me. My intelligence was bewildered, but let my consciousness never again be so impure. So we can only go back to Godhead when we give up our desire and attachment to enjoy in this material world. Now, the acharyas point out, Indra has not given up his desire yet.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying all this because he's being so crushed by Krishna at this point in time that he's saying all of these things, but it's not completely purified. He hasn't become a pure devotee after this pastime. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that later on in this same canto, he does the same thing again. Does anyone remember the pastime where he offends Krishna a second time? Satyabhama says she's in Dwarka and she says, can you get me that Parijata flower?
Yeah.
Krishna says, no problem. So jump on the back of Garuda. So they get on Garuda and they fly into Swaga. They go in, Krishna grabs the whole bush, right? And Indra comes out and he says, what are you doing? He said, I'm taking this back to Dwarka. He said, no, you're not taking it back to Dwarka. This is a heavenly flower. This is not going to earth. And Krishna said, okay. Then let's work this out. So again, second time, because still he hadn't realized. So the acharyas are pointing out that you have to give up your desire to enjoy in the material world. What keeps us in the material world? Right, the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. And until you give up that desire, you can't go back to Krishna. So Indra is unable, even at this point in time, even under so much pressure from Krishna, he's still unable to fully surrender. So he has to stay here. He goes back to the heavenly planets, but he's a devotee, but mixed. So we want to make more advancement than this. It takes time, but we need to.
Could it be another Indra?
Same.
Same.
Same one. You descend into this world, O transcendent Lord, to destroy the warlords who burden the earth and create many terrible disturbances. O Lord, you simultaneously act for the welfare of those who faithfully serve your lotus feet. So as we surrender to Krishna, he rewards us accordingly. So it's according to our bhakti that Krishna reciprocates. So Indra is approaching him in a particular way. He is getting reciprocation from Krishna in a particular way. But we're not meant to follow Indra. Who are we meant to follow? The bridge bhasis. That's who we're meant to follow. That's the example in this section. We're meant to follow the bridge bhasis. We're meant to learn to love Krishna exactly the way they learn. Gopi bhatu pada kamalayo dasa dasa anodasa. We're meant to become the servants of the servants of the residents of Vrindavan. And Jamuna Devi, every morning we hear the Govinda prayers sung by Prabhupada's disciple who passed away recently, Jamuna Devi. So, one time, because it says in Nectar of Instruction, you must follow in the footsteps of a resident of Vrindavan. And she said to Prabhupada, she said, it says here that you must follow in the footsteps. She said, are you? And Prabhupada said, yes, I am that resident. So by following Prabhupada, then we will develop the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, because Prabhupada was a resident of Vrindavan. And his mood is completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. Yeah, in 1968, Prabhupada was in Los Angeles. He said, you think I am in Los Angeles, but actually I am in Vrindavan. So at all times, Prabhupada was situated in Vrindavan in his consciousness. So that's what we're meant to develop as well, that kind of mood. Obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Great Soul, who are all-pervading and who reside in the hearts of all. My obeisances unto you, Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty. Unto him who assumes transcendental bodies according to the desire of his devotees, unto him whose form is itself pure consciousness, unto him who is everything, who is the seed of everything, and who is the soul of all creatures, are for my obeisances. What is the description here of Krishna? It's describing once again, Indra is saying, he is completely spiritual. And he takes on particular forms in order to reciprocate with particular devotees. When Krishna is in the mood and he takes the form of Ramachandra, he reciprocates with the devotees because the devotees have a particular mood towards him. And when he's in the original form of Krishna, the Swayam Bhagavan form, Brajendra Nandana in Vrindavan, then he reciprocates with the devotees in a particular way. Because he is in that form, he's in a particular mood, they're in that mood, they reciprocate with him. So then the rasa is exchanged in that particular mood. The sages of Dandakaranya, we'll hear about them in the next few chapters. The sages of Dandakaranya, they were there when Lord Ramachandra was on the planet. And they saw Lord Ramachandra. And they had conjugal feelings towards Lord Ram. But they could not associate with him in that way. Because they did not have the right body and he was not in that mood. He took the Ekapatni Brat. So he would not associate with others. He was not in that mood and they did not have the form. So then he said, I will come again, right, as Krishna. And you can come again as gopis, and then we can exchange in that particular way. So then they became sadhana siddha gopis. We'll hear about them in the next few chapters.
So, what about the sages of Naimisharanya? Who are they?
Which ones?
Naimisharanya, sages of Naimisharanya. Dandakaranya and Naimisharanya, are they the same?
No, no, Naimisharanya was. Everyone in Naimisharanya are in different moods. Because the acharyas say that when Shukadeva Goswami began to speak about Krishna with the gopis, some of the sages began to smile inappropriately. Not qualified. I thought it was like lusty exchanges. So then Sukadeva Goswami, when he saw they were like that, he didn't go deep into the conjugal pastimes because he saw not everyone there was qualified. Maharaj Pariksit was, but... My dear Lord, when my sacrifice was disrupted, I became fiercely angry because of false pride. Thus I tried to destroy your cowherd community with severe rain and wind. So what happens when we become proud? It destroys everything. Right? All of our good qualities become destroyed. Our opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness, it becomes impeded. You can't advance when you're proud. When we're in that mood, and we all get in that mood of being proud, we know we're really the only ones who really know. But when we're in the mood of being proud, you can't advance in Krishna consciousness. You're impeding your advancement. And then when you become too proud, like when you become really proud, you become angry. Right? And when you become angry, everything becomes ruined. So you have to be very careful. And Rupa Goswami specifically says, control anger in the very beginning of Nectar of Instruction. You don't control anger, everything. One time I was in Vrindavan, Gaur Purnim time, so around about this time. It was holy. Holy is a few days before Gaur Purnima. So devotees were running around throwing colour, you know, like that. And one devotee, he was obviously running around, he was throwing colour, and he threw colour at one devotee, and that devotee became so upset, like angry, like Indra, like angry. He picked up a stick. Seriously, he was furious. And he went, and then he was going to hit this devotee, and the guards came and they stopped. And then they grabbed the devotee who was throwing all the colour because it was announced in Mangalarti, do not do this. Because they didn't want this inside the temple complex, because otherwise it goes crazy. So they announced not to do it. So the guards grabbed that devotee and they carried him away. And that devotee was kind of dragging his feet, and they were like dragging him. And then the other devotee, he was so angry, he was following him with a stick, and he was hitting it on the ground as he was walking. He was looking at him. As soon as I get out of this complex and these guards look you down, I'm going to beat you. And I was thinking, my God, I think it was actually Gaur Purnim. I was thinking, my God, it's Vrindavan, it's Gaur Purnim. You've got a bit of pink on your shirt. And you're going to beat this guy to death. You know, it's exactly the same mentality as Indra. Is it really worth it? I mean, I couldn't have even imagined being like that in Vrindavan. This is how insane Indra became. So when you become proud, you become insane. And you become angry and you commit terrible offences. So pride has to be relinquished. I think it's Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru. Just trying to think. I think it's him. It's one of the acharyas. They say pride. No. Is it Bhakti? No, I can't remember who says it. Pride must be given up at all cost. Or pride must be given up under every circumstance. Don't carry pride. Don't allow it to overwhelm your consciousness. Well, we do it every day, but yeah.
In my upbringing here in Australia, you're always taught to have pride. You're always taught to, you know, have some pride. You know, you'll say to people, have some dignity. If someone offends you at work, you're expected to stand up for yourself, or you're weak, or you're. So it's just so hard to try to change that whole way of thinking.
Yep, it is. That's why there's not many devotees. Not many people. People are just proud. I know many people who are on the periphery of ISKCON. They associate with ISKCON. They've got the opportunity to surrender, but they're just too proud. You know, as long as you stay like that, then good luck. So. O Lord, you have shown mercy to me by shattering my false pride and defeating my attempt to punish Vrindavan. To you, the Supreme Lord, Spiritual Master, and Supreme Soul, I have now come for shelter. So what did Krishna do to Indra? He chastised him. So when we get chastised, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Good thing.
Good thing. Hands up if you think it's good. Hands up if you like getting chastised. You like it? Do you? Okay. So we should like it. We should actually appreciate chastisement. Prabhupada actually said that he liked the chastisements of the guru more than the praise. When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur chastised, he liked that more. So we should become attached to it. Not that like, but we should when it's happening, we should understand this is for my benefit. And we should reflect even while it's happening. We should think this is positive for me. This is helping me. That should be the mentality. So Indra, he's been chastised by Krishna, but it's helping him. Okay, last verse. Shukadeva Goswami said, thus glorified by Indra, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, smiled and then spoke to him as follows in a voice resonant like the clouds. So Krishna's only 7 or 8 years old now. He's a young boy, but his voice is deep, like clouds rumbling, because he is the Supreme Lord. So he's showing Indra, I am the Supreme Lord. That's why Indra is shaking. Imagine you come in front of a 7 or 8 year old kid and you're shaking. Imagine like Brinda. I come in front of Brinda and I'm like, oh. Yeah, it's funny. Srila Prabhupada ki.